So we discussed yesterday about ones and whether a woman can return to her husband after she was ne'anas. So now today the Gemara is going to discuss that within the ketubah we said in the Mishnah that an automatic part of the ketubah is that if she is taken into captivity, that he has to pay for her return, for her to be returned. Right, so what is the lashon was different for a kohen and for Yisrael. Right, the lashon for Yisrael was what that I will take you back into as a wife. Whereas for a kohenet, for a woman who's married to a kohen, right, the lashon was that I will return you to your medina, because he couldn't return as his wife. Right, when she was in Anas, she was a zona then, and he can't return as a wife. So therefore, you have to return her to medina. Now, what happens if, for some reason, there are other exogenous factors that impact on her ability to come back to be his wife. Right? For instance, that it's an inappropriate wife. And then do we still say then that she is entitled to have her redemption paid for by her husband? And that's what the machlokas here today, Abaye and Rav, are going to discuss. So we're going to start at the bottom of Nun Aleph and Beis. Amar Abaye, Almano the Kohen Gadol. Right? So an Almano to a Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry Almano, but the Kedushin are Tovsin, meaning that it works. They work. Chayav liftoto. He has to redeem her. Shani koreba uve kohenet adri nach lemedinatach. Because what is the requirement for a kohenet to be redeemed is only that he what? Returns her to her people. Meaning not that he has to return her as a wife. Right? We don't want him to return her as a wife. So since he can fulfill that obligation to bring her back to the Jewish people, right, therefore we say, go ahead, you're still obligated to do that. Right? Even though in general, when it comes to inappropriate marriages, we try to do everything we can to dissuade the marriage from persisting. Right? Over here, this is not going to undermine that because his return is he's returning to the Jewish people, not as a wife.
This general obligation, just pay down
screw. Right. Okay, so we're going to discuss that. Very good question. That's later today. We're going to discuss what's the obligations might be different between a wife and normal people. It's a great question. It's really a tremendous topic, but we'll try to touch on it a little bit today. Right. Again, this is an inappropriate marriage. Then, here, he does not have to redeem her. Why? That I return you as a wife. Because the obligation, the ksuba, towards a Yisrael, or Israelite, is that what? That he redeems her and takes her back as a wife. Here, he can't take her back as a wife, so he can't fulfill the obligation as it's written in the ksuba. Or as it's not, either it is or it was left out, but that his obligation is to the woman. Rabba Amar, Rabba says, Kol she'isur shviya gorim la chayif. Right, so that it has to do with what's causing the his inability to perform this. One is, if it's because that she was taken into captivity, then chayif liftoto. Then he has to redeem her. Iser davar acher gorim lo, if it's something else that's causing him not to, right, be able to take her back as a wife or whatever the situation is, eino chayav liftoto, then he does not have to redeem her. So Rabbo is arguing on Abaye's premise. Abaye's premise is that whether a kohenet and Israelite were going to be different. Israelite, since he has to return as a wife, we're going to say no, he's not obligated. But a kohenet, since he can't return as wife anyway, so who cares if there are other factors that are causing it, whether it's because she's a shvuya or because she was a almona. Who cares? He's still able to fulfill that obligation that's written in the ksuba. So Abaye says, go ahead. Rav says, no. If because prior to her being taken captive, he wasn't allowed to have her back as a wife, right? And so that means that Isser Davar Acher Gorim, there's something else causing the problem for him to return the Kohenet as a wife, which is the what? Namely the fact that she's an Almana to a Kohen Gadol. Then we say, no. Then he's no obligation to redeem her because there is an exogenous variable that's saying, don't return her as a wife prior to his obligations regarding the Pidyon Shvuyim. According to Rava, there's no obligation in either of these instances for Pidyon of his wife because she wasn't supposed to be his wife. Whereas Abaye says, no, if he can fulfill the letter of the law that's written in the Ksuba, then he should, even though, what, maybe there are other factors that would also prevent him from having her as a wife. Let's say this Machlok between Abaye and Rava is the same as another Machlok Tanai. Amadird Ishto Venishbet. So a person takes a neder that he won't get any hana from his wife. So in this case, he has to divorce her and give her a ksuba, because if he can't get any hana from his wife, basically he's unable to fulfill his obligations to his wife. So Rabbi Lezer, Omer, Podev, and Otin, La Ksubasa. Rav says he's got to redeem her and then give her her ksuba, meaning that Rav Yeshua Omer, notin la ksuba, so ve'inu poda. He gives her ksuba and says, take your ksuba and you figure out how to get out of this mess. So what's the point here? So v'amar Rabbi Natan, sha'alti et sumchus, I answered sumchus, sha'amar Rabbi Yeshua, notin la ksuba, so ve'inu poda, that he gives her ksuba and that's not to redeem her, because she hidira l'sof nishbeis was the case where he took the neder and then she was taken into captivity, but nishbeis l'sof hidira. Or was it a case where what? She was first captured and then he took this neder. Barmali lo shamati. Right? He goes, I never heard, I didn't know. But v'nirin devarim, it seems to make sense. Shedira lo sof nishbeis. It has to be a case where he took the neder prior to her being taken to captivity. Di amard, alright, nishbeis lo sof hidira. If you suggest what? That she was first taken into captivity and then he took the neder. Asili arume. Right, then he's going to cheat. Meaning that basically any time his wife's taken to captivity, it's too much to pay. He'll take a neder not to get an offer from her, throw her a ksuba and say, you know, you're on your own. So we don't want that to happen. So it must be what? That it was prior. So what's this machlokas sounds? So Gemara here is suggesting that my love, b'madr ishes kohen kamiflagay, right? That they're arguing in a case of the wife of a kohen. Right? Abaya damark Rabbi Elezer. Abaya goes like Rabbi Elezer. What does Rabbi Elezer say? Right, Rabbi Elezer says that you have to redeem her and give her a ksuba. So even though what? Even though, what's the reason he has to divorce her here? Because of the neder. Alright, in the case of Bai, what's the reason he really has it can't be together? Third, because it's a kohen gadol and almana. But in the interim, she was taken captive. So, but since he can fulfill that obligation, the ksuba that says, I'll bring you back to the Jewish people, not I'll take you back as a wife, he's obligated to do that, to redeem her, and what? Give her a ksuba. Right, Rabba Damak Rabbi Shua, and Rabba is going to hold like Rabbi Shua. Rabbi Shua says here what? That when he takes the neder, right, then he can give her a ksuba and say, you're on your own. Because why? Prior to her being taken into captivity, he already was going to divorce her, right? He can't take her back as a wife. Right, and so.
But he's still married to her.
Yes.
He didn't divorce her.
No, but the neder itself is going to obligate him, right? He has to give her ksuba and he has to go. And he can't fulfill the obligations under the ksuba, meaning that he's failing under all circumstances to fulfill those obligations under the ksuba. So the Gemara says, lo, hafo maizkidon kigoj nadra ihi, v'kayim lahu. So this is a case, what? Not where he took the neder, but she took the neder, right? And what? He goes ahead and it says, you know, the Baal has the opportunity to be Mayfair the Nidorim of a wife. So within the 24 hours after hearing it, or within the day that he hears it, by the sunset of that day, he's got to, what? He has to be Mayfair. If not, he's Mekayimit, so that it stays. So she makes a neder that she's not going to get an Ainah from him. And then he goes ahead and says, yeah, that's good, right? Right? And therefore, it's good. It stays as a neder. So now, based on this, Rabbi Lezer Savar, who notain etzba ben shina. Rabbi Lezer says, no, you know what? He could have been made for it. She was testing him to see if he really loved her. He said, I'm not going to get any more hanoah from her. And she wanted to see if he was going to be made for it. When he says, yeah, let it stay, right? She said, oh my gosh, she doesn't, you know, that was the test. And so he's the one who's kind of the one that he could have changed and he didn't. Rabbi Shua Savar, he not, no, that's what Ben Shina, no. She took the nether. It's her problem, right? So that's what's going on here. So Gemara says, "Ehi not na etzba ben shina." If we're going to place the blame on the woman because she took the neder, then what? Ksuba mayavite. Why is she getting a ksuba? Right? Meaning that she's the one who took the neder and she's the one causing the need for a divorce here. Right? Why is she entitled to a ksuba? Right? It's only when it's from the side of the husband that she's entitled to ksuba. But two, Amar Rabbi Natan shalti et sumchus. Right? Then what's the question, Rabbi Natan, to sumchus? Was the case when she took the netter first and then was captured, or benishbeis l'sof hidira? Or is it she was captured and then took the netter? Mar lo shamati. Right, he says, I don't know. Right, if it's her taking the netter, who cares when she took the netter? Meaning that when it comes to him taking the netter, then we worry when he took it, because if it was prior to her being captive, or after she was taken captive, you know, then we say he was trying to cheat. He was trying to do leirume and trying to get out of the obligation to redeem her. But if she takes the neder, it doesn't matter when she takes it. Whenever she takes it, she causes herself a problem. It shouldn't matter. He should be out of his obligation as soon as she takes it. So why is he even asking? So Gemara says, El olam de adra ihu. No, it's that he took the neder. V'abayim etaretz latame, v'rabam etaretz latame. Each one has their own way to explain this machlokas tanoim of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua. Bai explains this machlokas tanaim like this. Almana the kohen gadol kliyama lo pligi dechayev lifdota. Everybody agrees, according to Abaye, that what? A kohen gadol that's married to an almana, he has to redeem her. That's Abaye's opinion over here. That what? Since he can bring her back to the Jewish people, and not as a wife, he's obligated to redeem her. Everybody agrees when it comes to the case of Mamzer Nitina to Israel, where he can't fulfill the Tsuba obligations to return her as a wife. Therefore, he doesn't have to redeem her. If it's a case where it's an Eshet Kohen and it was a Neder, then everybody agrees the Chayav Liftoto, right? That you have to, what? Redeem her. When do they argue? Because that's the same case as Alman of the Kohen Gadol. Ki pligi madir eshet Yisrael. That's the machlokes between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Lezer is in a case, what? Where it was a neder regarding an eshet Yisrael. Rabbi Lezer azal batar mikora. Rabbi Yeshua azal batar basov. Right? So then it has to do with where do we look at their situation or their standing. Right? Whereas, as opposed to the fact by a mamzer netina liYisrael, there was never a moment where he should have been married to her. There's never a point in time where this was a proper marriage. Right? From the moment they got married, it was an inappropriate marriage, and therefore he's not obligated, according to everybody, to redeem her. By the case of a net there, right, then there is a point in time where this was a valid marriage. It was a valid marriage. Then they took the net there, and the net there caused a problem in the marriage. So the question is, when do we look at their marriage? Do we look at the marriage? Well, there was an appropriate marriage at one time, and therefore, since at one point in time, he could have fulfilled that obligation, like zeroed into, to return her as a wife. Even after the nether, he's still obligated to redeem her, because that obligation, right, devolved upon him when he married her, right? And that obligation stands even afterwards. You can't say that about a mamzer and a netina liYisrael, because that obligation never devolved upon him. Why? Because he could never have returned her as a wife. There was never a point in time where that could have happened, right? Whereas, over here, right, there was a point in time where she was a valid wife. And Rabbi Shua says, no, Rabbi Shua is about herself. At this point, when she was taken captive, what was her standing? Her standing when she was taken captive was that she can't be taken back as a wife. And that's what we look at. So according to Abaye, that's the machlokas tanaim over here. Everybody agrees to my position, Abaye says. But just as machlokas is about this nuanced point about when it's a wife of Israelite, where she took a nether. Do we look at it as the original standing, where she was a real wife, that she was a proper wife to him, and therefore he's obligated? Or do we look now, when she was taken captive, she was no longer going to be an appropriate wife, he can't return her as a wife, and therefore, right, it's no good. Robo metarets l'tamei, Robo goes according to his own reasoning, that's what? Alman ola koin godol mamzer mitin l'yisroel kliyam ola pligadeinu chayv l'fdoto. Right, no matter what, any inappropriate marriage, you don't have to do pidgin shvun. This machlokes between Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Shua has got to do with neder, whether it's an eshet kohen or an eshet Yisrael. Rabbi Lezer azel butter mikara. Rabbi Shua azel butter self. Right, again, the same idea that if there was a point in time where there was an appropriate marriage, then the obligation started for him to redeem her, and that doesn't go away. Whereas, what if the obligation really starts when she's taken into captivity? And then, at that point in time, she was not an appropriate wife, and he does not have to redeem her. Right, so that leaves off that small machlokas between Abaye and Rava about, right, again, just the chazer. Abaye believes that as long as you can fulfill the letter of the law in the ksuba, then that's good, then you can do it. So that's our case over here, right? By Aman of the Kohen Gadol, he can return her to the Jewish people, not as a wife. That's what it says in the ksuba, and therefore he's obligated to do it. Mamzer is netina liYisrael, where he has to return her as a wife. Yisrael has to return her as a wife. That he can't do, so that's not going. Rava says no. Rava says anything that if the marriage can't be, right, sustained outside of being taken captive, then he doesn't obligate it to redeem her. And in this case, neither of these two marriages should be sustained, and therefore there's no obligation to redeem her. And each one of them, according to that, explains Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua in their own reasoning. Both of them have to do with basically, when you take a neder, do we look at the original state of the marriage, or do we look at the state of the marriage at the time of the captivity? And then it will fit into each one of their reasonings. Okay. Now, to come to your question about Pidyon Shvuyim, what's the obligation of Pidyon Shvuyim? Maybe there's a different obligation to a wife. Nishbet chayav liftoto. Tana Rabbanan. Nishbet b'chayav balo b'achakav meis balo. What happens if she was taken captive while her husband was still alive, and what then her husband passes away? Hikir ba'balo. If the husband knew about it prior to his passing away, then yorshim chayavim liftoto. Right, then the Yorshim are chayav, the inheritors are obligated to redeem her. Right? Lo hikir ba'bala, Ein yoshim chayvim levdota, right? If her husband did not know that she was taken into captivity, then the obligation never started until, you know, until that knowledge came up to being. And therefore, what? Even the yoshim are not obligated now. Ein yoshim chayvim levdota, because the monetary obligations can be passed down. From a meaning that if she has, if he has a monetary obligation to his wife, then that lien or that mortgage, right, outlives him, and therefore her lien on the property is still there. But if this is a right that she has in the ksuba, that right does not, right, is not sustained past his lifetime. Now the yorshim don't have those obligations to unless they're specifically stated, like the takanas of usha, right, the takanas that they the zonos. And that the woman can stay in his house and not take her ksuba. Each of these instances, right, there is a reason afterwards that the yorshim are chayav. But otherwise, there's not a sustained obligation by the yorshim, right? Levi savar b'mav ed uvda ki ha-masniso. Right. So, truthfully, you could argue on this, right? But what is the knowledge of the husband really relevant over here, right? Yeah, he has an obligation, right? And that obligation sustained, right? So that's why Levi suffer lemevad uvuki hamasnisa. Levi went ahead and wanted to try to do something. I mean, he wanted to force the yorshim, even though the husband had not known about it. He wanted to force the yorshim to go ahead and redeem.
But that's not ki hamasnisa.
What? No, like this brisa, that if he knew about it prior hand.
Oh, right? So Levi's trying to do it in the case of where he knew about it.
He knew about it, oh, right? So enforce the yorshim. Amalei Rav, Hochemar Chabibi. This is what my beloved Chabibi over here, when Rav says that, is Rav Chia, right? Rav Chia was his uncle, right? He was uncle from two sides. He was related, he was his mother and father's half brother and half sister. And they married. It's Gemara and Brachos, Gemara and Pesachim as well, about that they were half brothers and half sister, and they married. And then Rav was the product of that, and then Rav Chia is his uncle and his uncle from both sides of the family.
His
right. So Amar Chavivi leis hilchas agai masnisa. The lacha is not like this brisa. Ela kiha the Tanya, like what we said in this brisa. Nishveis la'achar misas bala, ena yisomim chayvim leftotav. She's redeemed after the death of her husband. No obligation. Lo od el afilu nishveis b'chayi bala, even if she was captive during her husband's life. Barakar kach meis bala, ena yisomim chayvim leftotav. She'en ani korei ba, bo tzbinach, lin too. Because that's the answer. What? The answer is, doesn't matter, because the obligation, the ksuba, is to return her as a wife. He can't fulfill that obligation anymore, so the yisomim no longer have the obligation. The obligation was to return her as a wife, and that doesn't exist. So according to this,
children of a Kohen,
right,
have to.
Oh, so maybe, right. Maybe according to Abaye, right? Maybe according to Abaye, right? Children of a Kohen might have to return them, right? Might have to do that because children, again, according to Rava, it wouldn't be relevant because Rava says it has to be the shvuya that's causing the problem. Lowly into, if there's another option that was causing the problem, like death, which is causing it to be a problem, right? Then it wouldn't be. But in case where he died after she was taken to captivity, maybe in that case it would work for Rava. According to Abaye, you're right. The possibility is what? That she could, in that case, could take her back.
Also, you might have a case in Yibum.
I'm sorry?
If her husband died,
right,
and they had no kids,
right.
So isn't there a case also...
So the Yibum would have to take her, right. So if he takes her as a wife, then maybe he would have to undertake the obligations of
because
the...
Because there is an obligation of marriage. Right.
Right, he would have to undertake it. Although, right, the question is now, she was already nishbeis before, right, before he would have married her, so that maybe that obligation is not sustained unless he can't consummate the yibum.
Right.
That's the issue, right? He can't consummate the yibum, so then maybe those obligations would not devolve upon him until that marriage is consummated. So, all right, so we have, right, but those are a good point. I think maybe according to Abaye, that there could be an obligation here. Although again, the obligation seems to be sustained on the Baal and not on the children. I mean, the rights of the woman do not pass down to the children, but only to the husband himself, who can fulfill this obligation. Lack is early into, right? So even according to Kedai, was suggesting maybe that Abaye would say okay. Maybe even in this case, Abaye would agree because he can't. Right, the obligation comes from the fact that he can return her, that he should return her as a wife, and that is a right that she has, and that right may not be able to be passed down, even for a kohenet, to the yorshim. Right now, the question about how much do you have to pay? Tarabana, nishbeis, vayumavakshim menu ad asora b'damel. She was taken into captivity, and they're asking for 10 times her worth, right? Pam rishona poda, first time he has to redeem her. From this one, that time onward, he can make a choice. What? Redeeming her or not redeeming her? Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. All right, I'm going to come back. There's a lot of... the Yerushalayim talk about this a lot. Let's just do a little piece of the sugya, and then we'll come back and discuss what the issues are here. Right? Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Rabbi Shimon Maseil says, Ein podim et teshuvim yoter akidamei demehem. Shimon says, you never redeem captives for more than their worth. Right? So here that the Tanakhama says that only you can go up to 10 times its worth. I mean, that's just a figurative lashon, not the actual amount, but you can't... Rabbi Shimon Gomes says, you only pay for their value. Right? The Tanakhama suggests that any amount that they ask for, at least the first time, you have to pay. So the Mara says, Mipnei tikun olam, so we're going to get back to this again in 1 second, because it would cause problems if you did. So habich de demeim podim. So according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, it says to me, if it's her real value, then you redeem redeemer, apodi de pirkono yotera ksuba sa. Even though her redemption is worth more than her ksuba. This is the redemption is an obligation of the ksuba. So if this redemption exceeds the value of a ksuba, then you have like almost the tafel becoming the ikar. This is a subcategory of the ksuba, right? And therefore, now you have to redeem her, you're going to end up paying more than the whole value of the ksuba. So does Rabbi Shimon Gamliel really believe that's true? Very many. Nishbeis, vayu mevakshu menu at asar b'ksubasa. Not asar at 10 times her value, but 10 times her ksuba. Pamri shona podem ikami lech ratza podem ratza eno. But according to the Tanakhama, in that case, what? The first time he has to redeem her. After that, he has a choice. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Mary, mahaya pirko na keneg ksubasa. He only has to pay up to the value of her ksuba. So that seems to undermine what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel said before, that you pay her full value no matter what it is relative to her ksuba. So Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel trei kulei yisleh. He has two kulos, meaning that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel believes, number one, you don't pay more than her value, and number two is you don't pay more than her ksuba. So you pay the lesser of her value or her ksuba, whichever one that comes.
Just hear those hostage negotiations.
right.
Is this tikkun olam?
Okay, oh yeah, so let's explain what tikkun olam is.
Incentivize.
Oh, right, very good. So that's machlokas in the Gemara in Gittin. There's a number of Gemaras in Gittin, the Mishnahs in Gittin, that talk about tikkun olam. There are a number of things that Chazal established because of tikkun olam. One of them was that we do not redeem hostages before more than their true value. So there the Gemara had some machlokas about what the issue is. There's two possibilities. One is duchaka de tzibura. One is what? That it's going to place an undue burden on the tzibur. Because every time they're going to take captives, the tzibur is going to have to pay up this unreal amount, and they won't be able to sustain it. I mean, the Jewish community will be too much of an obligation. The other possibility is what you're suggesting, which is what? That if you pay more than their value, you will incent them to take captives again, because they know they're going to get paid much more, right? Then it becomes a lucrative business. The business is a good business, right? The business is getting better. So they're going to do more and more of this because it's a good business, and that's why. So that's a machlokas in the Gemara in Gittin. So a lot of the Rishonim point out here, right, what does it seem? It seems from this Gemara that what? That the Gemara is saying that the problem is duchaka de tzibura. That the problem is that it causes an undue burden on the tzibur. Why? Because here we say what? That the husband's allowed to redeem her for 10 times her value. Right? The Gemara doesn't say, well, 10 times her value, according at least to the Tanakhama. Right? That's a problem to redeem her 10 times her value. No. The Gemara says, no, that 10 times the value is okay, because why? That's the husband's obligated to do that. That doesn't cause any burden on the tzibur. That's the husband's obligation. So the husband's got to pay that out. But if you said that the problem was what? Paying too much for hostages is going to incent more hostage taking, then what? Even the husband should be restricted from paying 10 times his wife's value. So other Rishonim say, no, that's not a fair assessment. Why? Because when do we say that you're not allowed to pay more than one's value? That only comes when you're paying for a third party. Okay, when you're redeeming someone who is, right, a third party, you come to the tzibur and ask them to redeem them. So we don't do that because of this tikkun olam. But can a person out of their own money pay more, right, than they're worth? Because, number one, there is no duchat to the tzibur. And maybe even in this case, right, there won't be the issue of... Right, not everybody can afford it. Number two is there's an obligation.
Incentive to kidnap the same person again.
Right. But the
Right.
They went back to her, but they might be because of another halacha, which is what? That by mitzvah saseh, the Gemara gives a limit until how much you have to pay for mitzvah saseh. But when it comes to mitzvah lo taseh, someone has to give all their money to prevent themselves from being over a mitzvah lo taseh. And how many mitzvahs lo taseh, when a person's in captivity, are they going to violate? So therefore, he has an obligation then to spend his money, right, to redeem himself. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch brings down in Shulchan Aruch, when they bring the halacha down, and not paying yotermi kedmei demehem, and the Rambam, that their exception might be for oneself. That oneself, they can spend as much, they can make their own choice to spend as much money as they want when it comes to their own money and their own captivity. One, because of this issue of what they're obligated to prevent themselves being on real life. And number two is because we might paskin also that it's only ducha de tzibura. If it's ducha de tzibura, then him paying more than the value is not a ducha de tzibura. So then, these Rishonim suggest what? Maybe ishto kagufa. So based on ishto kagufa, then there's no proof from here that that we paskin ducha de tzibura. Because why? This is the exceptional case. The exceptional case is for myself. So just like for myself it's an exception that I can pay more, so too for my wife it's going to be an exception that I have to pay more for her because ishto kagufo. And therefore, in this case, we can't prove which side they're taking over here because these are the two exceptions, him and his wife, so that he can pay more for it and not prove whether the problem of tikkun olam is ducha de tzibura or the problem is what, that they're going to send people to pay more. There's one other exception that they're shown to bring down, and that is sakanas defashos. And this, all tikkun olam and all this had to do with monetary obligations, right? By sakanas nefashos, do we say, when it comes that the captive is in danger, do we say that supersedes all these considerations? And when it comes to sakanas nefashos, you have to redeem them no matter what. Right? So now, that comes really today, is one of the major issue with Israeli soldiers, right? Unfortunately, that are taken into captivity, right? They definitely are the sakanas nefashos, right? And the question of paying more than their value, which is, it's always, I mean, obviously people are, there's no value you can set in some sense on people, but we always do. There's no clue. It's not a one-for-one thing that we pay for these soldiers, and therefore we maybe incentivize them to do it again. So that consideration has to be taken. But when it comes to sakanas nefashos, we usually, that supersedes again all these considerations.
Yeah, but the argument is that you're creating a greater sakanas nefashos for more people.
Right, in the future. Right. So we may not say that.
On two levels. Number one, the people that you're letting go.
Right.
Are usually established terrorists. Yeah. So you're creating the greatest regard because they're liable to do it again. And number two,
everyone else, all those soldiers.
Yeah. You're putting other soldiers at greater risk.
Right. So that might be. It's a good question. Rav Asher Weiss gave a shiur on this once, and it's a very difficult topic. But first of all, by sakanas nefashos, number one, it may be that there is no considerations. Meaning that when it comes to sakanas nefashos, we don't look in the future what the future risk to other people is, because this when one person is vadai sakanas nefashos, and the future is a safek sakanas nefashos, we say take care of the vadai sakanas nefashos, and we do not, right, look at the future safek nefashos. So that might be one consideration where all other considerations are let go, right? The second consideration again was with letting terrorists go, which is another interesting point. But again, that comes under the, if we have a badai sakanas nefashos and a safek in the future, I mean that, right, safek karof the badai, but it's still a safek, do we take the immediate sakanas nefashos? But there are those that say, like you, and suggest that even in the makom sakanas nefashos, if it's going to create a pattern in the future that's going to cause problems, right, so then we may still stand by the fact that that we don't redeem and more than their value in sakanas nefashos is going to create this chain of creating more and more sakanas nefashos. Again, it's a very, very difficult situation. I think Rav Asher Weiss said that obviously there are a lot of considerations and we should try our hardest to get these soldiers back, and that I think in the case of sakanas nefashos, I think it leaned very heavily that there's an obligation to get the soldiers back and to make sure that they come back. Even because of causing the precedent of, you know, having problems in the future. There is one thing, like you're saying, the Gemara says that you're not allowed to, we don't teach hostages to run away. We don't help them escape. Because in the future, it's going to cause problems for other hostages because they're going to guard them better and they're going to lock them down because you're teaching them, that's again one of the tikkun olam. Again, this is a case where the Gemara is talking about a case of monetary, again, where it seems to be they're talking about it's a monetary obligation. And if you teach them to run away, in the future they're going to cause them to be in a lot more lockdown situation, and it's going to be, for future, it's going to cause a lot of problems. So again, here, when the Israeli, you know, that's what's happened here, that in the past Israel has raided and tried to free the hostages. So now with the Gilad Shalit and others, that they put them into such deep, you know, places where they can't get to them anymore. I mean, because of that past consideration. But again, maybe by sakanas nefashos, all these considerations drop, and we don't make those future assessments about what's going to happen. All right, so that's one. Rashi also points out, Rashi has an interesting point here. Rashi says here, Ratzapol, there Ratzainapol, after the first time. Right? So number one is, Rashi says what? The Lo Takinu Bana Rabbana Elechad Pidyon. That she's only entitled, she gets one get out of jail free card. I mean, the Ksuba only entitles her to one Pidyon. After that, it's up to him if he wants to do it or not. I mean, that no obligation from the Ksuba. Tosfos jumps on and says, it doesn't seem to make so much sense that it should be a continuous obligation. But he does find problems, even with the ones who the Rabbeinu Hanano suggests that even afterwards it's not an obligation to pay 10 times the amount. Just afterwards it's not an obligation to pay, it's an obligation just to pay her true value. Right? That's the way Rabbeinu Hanano learns. The way Rashi learns it is the first time it's 10 times, afterwards no obligation at all. Rabbeinu Hanano learns no. First time obligation to pay 10 times, afterwards to pay her true value. Tosfos deals with both opinions and shows what the problems are with both opinions, but just so you know that there are two ways to read that Gemara. Alright, it's continuing. Lokta chayav derufota, right? So if she is sick, he has to provide her with, right, medicine provider with refua. Tarabana, almana nizonit, minichse yisomim, bitzrichu refua reiki mizonos. Right, so a almana, one of the tanaim of the ksuba was what? That after her husband passes away, if she does not take delivery of her ksuba, she can live off the estate, and she gets mizonos out of the estate that is left. So what's the unique character of mizonos? Ein la kitzvah. It has no, right? It has no limit to it. There's no value you can assign to mizonos because every day, depending how long she lives, how much she eats, all these things. So too refua has that same aspect to it. Refua, what? Is something that is like mizonos, and that it doesn't have a kitzvah.
Well, it's different. Okay.
Right.
It's similar in that it can go on for a long time, but it's right. Different in that you create a very onerous situation on a daily basis.
But the refuah,
matter.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, but the amount is not important, because mizonos also could be, depending what, you know.
Right,
exactly. But the Gemara's considerations, at least right now, seem to be kitzvah and ain't kitzvah. We're going to see in a second. Rav Shimon Omer, refuah sheish la kitzvah, nirpeitz miksubasa. If it's a limited amount obligation, then she's got to take it out of her ksuba. Why? Because that's not like mizonos, right? Since it's a fixed amount that she needs for her medical needs, right, that's the equivalent of an obligation of the ksuba, where she's taking value of her ksuba. Right, that's not what the chacham said. When she stays in the estate, she's only entitled to mizonos. She's not entitled to her ksuba. If she takes delivery of her ksuba, then she loses her rights to mizonos. So it's also here, if she has a fixed amount that has to be paid for her medical bill, right, then that's an obligation of the ksuba. She ain't like kitzvah if it has no right end to it, meaning then it becomes mizonos. And therefore, she could take it out of the estate to pay for it. I mean, Rashi points over here, why is refuah like mizonos? Right, if you look in the last wide line in Rashi on the top here, he says, "V'im tzricha refuah refuah mizonos t'tavayu chiyuta ninu." Right, because they both sustain someone's life. I mean, they're life sustaining. All right, so you have these ideas that if you can get as close as it to mizonos, then she has the right to take it out of the estate, which is that it's, you know, life sustaining, that it has no limit. Whereas if it's a one-time payment, right, then it becomes like nishbase, like in the case of her pidyon, where it's an obligation of the ksuba, and then she has to take it out of the value of her ksuba, meaning that's part of the value of her ksuba, and therefore she can't take it out of the estate. So now, what happens? Okay, so Miyachon Asua causes Dam Yisrael Krefuah Shein LaKitzvah, those that needed bloodletting in Eretz Yisrael, that was like something that did not have it's a refuah that doesn't have an end to it, meaning that's something that's a continuous need. So it was a regular, regular checkup. She went for a regular bloodletting, right? So that is part of her estate needs, right? And therefore, Kriveh de Rabbi Yochanan. So the case where the relatives of Rabbi Yochanan came, Havaluhu itat abo, they had a mother of a father, right? David Tzricha, so this is an Amona, who is looking at, say, David Tzricha Rufua, Kol Yoma. She needed to get her medical needs attended to every day. So Atu the Kameh de Rabbi Yochanan, so they came to Rabbi Yochanan and asked him what to do. So Amar Lehu, he said to Izilu Kotele Mide Lerofe, try to convince a doctor to take on her, right, her refuah for a fixed amount. Basically, instead of paying, how you get a one-time lump sum payment, instead of taking the annuity all the way through, get a doctor who will take a lump sum payment. Why did he do this? Why did he give him that suggestion? Why? Because
if it's fixed.
Exactly. So he said, if you have to pay every day, then it comes out of the estate. Right, but if you get it to a lump sum payment, then it becomes the obligation of the ksuba. So you can take delivery of her ksuba, part of her value of her ksuba, or not. Right. So then, he says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Afterwards, Asinu Atzmenu Kiorchei Adayonim. afterwards he felt bad that he gave them the advice. Why? Because he became Matzorchei Deinam, like a lawyer. Right? He was helping them make tainas. He was helping them get, you know,
it's like the biggest
put down. Right. Maybe a lawyer, right, exactly. Right? That's the Mishnah Novos. So I say here, he says, oh, no, you know, that we were helping out the Balei Din. See, Mikara might suffer, Sof might suffer. Like, in the beginning, when he gave advice, what was he thinking? And in the end, when he said, oh, I don't want to, why did he give advice? So in the beginning, Mikara Savar, Umibsar Chalotitale. Right? These are his relatives. He's got to take care of family. So he went to take care of his family. The Sof Savar, Adam Choshuv Shaini. He says, in the end, yes, if it was for a normal person, yes, they have to help out their family and help them deal with these issues. But in my case, I'm an Adam Choshuv, people are going to learn from me what to do. And they won't know to distinguish between family and not family. Right? And therefore, I should have been more careful about making these suggestions. Right? So now, Vayter in the Mishnah, this new Mishnah talks about what? More obligations inside of the Ksuba. Right? Now, what are the obligations? Before, the Mishnah said, if it's not written into the Ksuba, then what? And it's still there. So again, here, these are other items that are automatically a part of the Ksuba, even if they're not written. Lo katav la...
But if it says, well, clearly, but not this or that, that's okay?
No. Oh, that's the machlokes we had yesterday, whether if you have a ksuba that leaves out certain things.
Right.
Apoche miksuba, amona, mata, mano, and matayim, whether they have the ability to do that.
No, but if it says dafka, you know...
That he's not obligated in these items? I don't... Well, we know for sure.
We know the 200 and the 100 is not... You know, the minimum you can't discuss.
But there, even there, Rabbi Huda said he had to give her... That it had to be there. He had to give her a receipt that she was receiving it, right? Okay. So it might be that the ksuba has to include them. Uh-huh. And then afterwards, she can write a... They can make some agreement outside of the ksuba that says that we're not going to do it. I'm not sure that within the ksuba they can do that. I mean, that the ksuba automatically has these items in it. Uh-huh. And then you have to... if you want to undo that, right, then you got to do it outside of the ksuba, maybe. Right, lo katav la, benin dechren, and again, that would have to do with the machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir yesterday, whether even outside the ksuba can you get rid of it. Now, Tosfos dealt with whether even Rabbi Meir agrees outside the ksuba you can alter it or not. Alright, lo katav la, benin dechren, davalech, minaychu, inyon yartum kesef ksubatech. Right, that if all my male children that have come from me, they inherit my ksuba. Yesra chukachon, dim achuchon. Then, more than that their brothers get. Chayev shu tnai beis din, right? That's because it's my beis din. We're going to get to about what the tnai benin dechren is, all right? Ksuba's benin dechren, the male children. We'll get to it in the Gemara. But not nuchman, di avin leichem mina, you have in the atvin bebeiti min zame chsai, ad tukachon the guvrin. If this is missing from it, that any female children I have will take mizonos out of the estate until they're taken as wives, then again, chayev, that's automatically in there, even if it's not. Why? Shu tnai beis din. These are all... It's not based into included in the ksuba. So these are two we talked about. These are two takanas usha. One is ksuba's benin dechren, which the Gemara is going to deal with. Second, and the other one is that the daughters get to feed out of the estate until they get married, right? At yehei devet beveti mitzanim echsai kol yomai migar almanutech. Right, that if you stay in the house, meaning that you stay in the estate and don't take delivery of your ksuba, you can take mizonos out of the estate. Again, even if that's not written there, he's obligated to provide that because that's the Tanai Basin. That's what the people of Yerushalayim used to write. Anche Galil Kotvim Kanche Yerushalayim. The Anche Galil followed the way of the Yerushalayim. Anche Yehuda, but the people of Yehuda, right? Ayu Kotvim Anche Yerzu Ayorshim Leten Lach Tubatech. Until the Yerushalayim want to give you your ksuba. So it's in the choice of the Yerushalayim. According to Anche Yerushalayim and Anche Galil, the choice is by the Almona. She either takes delivery of her ksuba, or she can stay and eat out of the estate. Whereas the Anche Yehuda said no. The Anche Yehuda said no. It's the choice of the Yorshim. Either they can pay her the lump sum out in her ksuba, or they can feed her. If you call from Ratzu Yorshim, no, then like ksubasa pochunata, and they can give it out. So the question: they both have the same sides, which is that either ksuba or she gets to eat. The question is, whose choice is it? Right? Is it the Yisom's choice or is it the Amana's choice? So Amar Yochanan, so let's deal with this ksubin b'din dechren. Amar Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimba Yochai, Mipnei Ma Hitzkinu Ksubas B'din Dechren. What is this Ksubas B'din Dechren? Kadesh Yikpots Adam Yichtov Levito Kibno. So that a person in the dowry will give as much money to his daughter as he gives to his son. What does this mean, right? In Yerusha only moves through male children. So what's a father afraid of? He's afraid that what? He's going to give his money to his daughter. She's going to marry a husband, and it's going to end up with a bunch of male children that maybe not even his. It's a possibility that another woman will have, you know, a bunch of boys, and all this money is going to end up on with the second wife of this husband, or it's going to end up with people that have nothing to do with his family. It has nothing to do with his daughter. So he's going to be reluctant to give money to his daughter. So the Gemara says, first of all, the Rachman Amar broadly wrote, Brata Lotrit Adrabonim Etakne Ditiro Brata. First of all, why are we trying to change the Yerusha here? The Torah says that the sons inherit, the daughters don't inherit. And now all of a sudden the Chachamim are coming along and trying to give precedence to the daughter over the sons? Hanami do Reitsu. No, this is also from the Torah. Why? Dechtiv Chunashim Velidu Banim. Take wives and have sons. Ubanot. Uchuli Bnechem Nashim. Then for your sons, take wives. Vebnotechem Tnula Nashim. And your daughters give to husbands. So it says, Bishlamo Banim Biyode Kaimi. For your sons, you can take wives, right? That's within your ability to do that. Ella Benate Mi Kaimi Biyode. How can a daughter, right, when you're dating the husband, the male asks the girl out, right? The male asks the one to marry. So how could you create a situation where your daughter is married, right? I mean, you can't, because you have to wait for the male to come along and ask to be married or to initiate the...
You have to have foresight of the modern world.
That's right, that's right. Sakam Ashmalon, right? Zanilbashaw, you have to dress her up. Benichsa, you know, give her whatever she needs. Benetivla, Midei. Right, if you give her a big dowry, then people will jump on her. Right, people will come and then jump on, and they'll be excited to marry her. So that's the idea. What? So you see that there's an obligation to give your daughter enough money or something that would encourage others to come marry her, to incentivize others to marry her. So that's how you can encourage or provide for your daughter's marrying, right, without actually marrying her off. That's how you marry her off, by giving her a large dowry. So, v'ad kamo, and how much do you have to give her? How much are you allowed or entitled to give to your daughter? So, by Rav Dami Tavayu, ad isra nichsei, until a tenth of his possessions. So, up to 10% of his possessions, you should give in order to encourage others to marry his daughter. This does come back to the original Gemara. I remember earlier on, we had this idea that after he passed away, la farnosa, to take dowries out of the estate, how much do we take out of the estate? So there, the Gemara says, the farnosa only comes out of metaltalin, right? That was what the Gemara said over there. So the question back then was, when we say that we assess, right, shamin la'av, right, back then we had the position of Shmuel, that you assess how much the father would give, and then you give even out of metaltalin. That was Shmuel's position, right? So there, the Rishonim deal with the fact was, when Shmuel made a statement, was that even more than a tenth of his possessions? Or is that only, meaning that up to a tenth of his possessions, or we assess if it's less? Meaning, was it as a tenth a cap, no matter what? Or do we assess and say, okay, now the tenth was, right, the tenth was an assignment, but he can even go above a tenth. Now, if we assess it, that's what he would, right, that's what he would do, right? He would even give more than a tenth. So there, a lot of the Rishonim believe that it's a cap. Isser, the tenth is a cap. And then when we assess the father, that's only the kula, to say less than a tenth. Right, we would say if he would have given less than a tenth, then we assess the father as what he would have given less than a tenth. But a tenth, that's cap remains, and you don't go above that. You don't exceed that. All right. So now this ksubin din rechlin, the way it works is what? For instance, what happens if a woman predeceases her husband? Right. Who does the ksuba goes to? The husband. Belongs to the husband. Right. If the husband passes away, then the woman's entitled to her ksuba. Right. That's the point of the ksuba, or to stay like the tanai in the basin, to stay in the estate and feed out of the estate. So what happens when the woman predeceases her husband? The money all goes to her husband. So now what's the worry? The worry is that the husband has two wives. Say she has two wives, and Rachel, she has Rachel, Leah and Rachel, right? Or his two wives. Leah has, so let's call it five sons, right? And Rachel has, well, let's call it six sons. Leah has six sons, right? And Rachel only has two sons. So what's going to happen? Rachel passes away. She predeceases her husband. Her husband gets the whole ksuba. Then when her husband passes away, Yerusha goes to all the male children. So now there are eight male children to split up the Yerusha. So this father-in-law is thinking, oh my gosh, if I give my daughter a lot of money, what's going to end up? It's going to end up, most of my money is going to end up with the sons of this other woman who have nothing to do with my family. So why would I want to give her a big dowry? So the Chazal created this idea called Ketubin B'din Dichrin, which is what? That the woman's ksuba, even though if she predeceases her husband, it belongs to her husband. Nevertheless, when her husband dies, her male children get precedence on the value of her ksuba, right? So if her ksuba is worth 200, right? Then those male children first take 200 out of the pot. The other male children take their mother's ksuba out of the pot if she also predeceased, right? So if Leah and Rachel both die, then what each of the six children and the two children each take their mother's ksuba, and whatever's left over gets split according to Yerusha Doraisa. So whatever's the father's possessions gets split according to the Yerusha Minat Torah. So that's the idea, was that why does the father want to give to his daughter? Because he's ensured that the value of whatever the dowry is will only end up with his grandchildren from his daughter, right? Because end up with his male grandchildren, it will stick with them. And that's what this was the idea of the Takanas Chachamim. All right, so now the Gemara is going to challenge in a number of ways. Why can't you sustain this Takana without changing all these Dinim Yerusha? So the Gemara says here, right? So let us say what? That the ksuba has two parts to it. The ksuba has the basic component, which is the 200, and then it has the dowry that exceeds it, whatever you added on top of that. So let us say like this. The male children will inherit the excess of the, right? That was exceeds the basic ksuba, right? And the baal, the husband, will keep, right, that which is the basic ksuba, because that's what he's entitled to. That's what, you know, the ksuba, the basic ksuba, is not what he's adding on. That everybody gets, right? So the Gemara says, "Imkein avanami mimne velo kotav." Then the father's not going to do it. He's going to say, "If the baal gets this piece, if it's not all going to my children, there's not enough of an incentive to do this." So the Gemara says, "Well, ema hechad kotav av lichtav baal, hechlokav av lichtav baal." So only the base ksuba will also belong to the male grandchildren, only when what? The father added on to the dowry. But if the father did not add on to the dowry and left it as the basic ksuba, then what? The takana doesn't need. We don't need the takana. The whole takana is to encourage the father to give more. So if he doesn't give more, then maybe the takana should not be in place, meaning that the ksuba should go to the husband and it should not go automatically to, or not have precedence to, the male grandchildren from his daughter. Right? So the Gemara says, lo plug. Right? Lo plug rabban. The Rabbanan don't differentiate. When they make a takana, they make an objective takana which stands for everything. So Gemara says, Vat ben abonim nami tirod. Right? So if kenachlu should be your Rabbanan. So then if you have a daughter, right, that's among the children, so then she should also inherit. If the Chachamim are already changing the way this works, right, why not have daughters also inherit? So the Gemara says, Kenachla Shavu Rabbanon. The Rabbanon made it like regular Nachla Doraisa. Whenever, this is a general principle that Rabbanon came Doraisa Tikkun. Whenever they made a Takana, they try to pattern it after whatever was the Torah precedent. Rabbi Soloveitchik always took that even by Minhagim. He took that to a very big extreme, that it always was patterned after an existing format that we know, or paradigm that we know. So they have a paradigm of Yerusha. Yerusha goes down to male children. So when the Chachamim created their Ksuba bin different, they also followed the pattern Doraisa that it goes to male children. So Gemara says, Bat ben abonot, he wrote. So then, if you have a daughter among other daughters, so then that she should, right? Because that midoraisa works, right? The real right, so if you have many daughters, then the daughters, and no sons, then the daughters split up Yerusha. So what happens if you have this same thing, where the daughter, she has, they both wives only have daughters, right? And, so why don't we say there's a ksubas benin nukban, meaning that the ksuba should go down to this one daughter. So Gemara says, lo polig rabbanon. They didn't differentiate, meaning that they went from the basic normal case. The normal case is that there's going to be Yerusha and that it's going to go to the male children. Betigve mimetaltele, right? Kiksuba. So wait, she should take from mitaltele, right? Like ksuba. Ksuba is entitled to take not only out of karkei, but even out of taltelin, right? So somewhere it says, tigve mimetaltele. Sorry, I read this wrong. Kiksuba shavu rabbanon. They made it like the ksuba. Ksuba can only be taken out of karkai. It can only be taken out of real property. Right, so it's over here. So tiftru of mishimishabde. Right, so then she should be able to take it out of, she should be able to take it out of what? Property that is already been bought, meaning that it's encumbered property. Right, so a ksuba can be taken out of encumbered property. So too over here, they should be able to take it out of encumbered property. Where it says, yartuntunan. Right, it's Yerusha. Yerusha cannot be taken out of what? Out of encumbered property. Only a ksuba can be taken out of property. So Gemara says, "Ve'ema afagav deleka motor dinar." Maybe even if there's not enough. So we said here, ksuba is the nechren is what the male children split the ksuba, and the leftover is given between them, split between them. So Gemara says that only if there's enough to create each ksuba to be satisfied, plus an excess to have Yerusha midoraisa be satisfied. Right? So then you have to have an excess of the two ksubos. If you don't have an excess of the two ksubos, then the whole thing falls apart, because we want you to do Yerusha Min HaTorah. Right? And we're not going to uproot Yerusha Min HaTorah. We only do it if there's an ability to do Yerusha Min HaTorah. How's the ability to do Yerusha Min HaTorah? If there's enough for both side parties to get both women to get their ksuba passed down to their male children, plus excess that will be split between the children. So where it says, Me'ma afa gav delekha motor dinar. Let it say, even when there's not any excess of the two ksubos, they should split it up this way. So Gemara says, "Makom tokama ikara nachla doraisa lo takinu rabbanan." When you're going to uproot inheritance min haTorah, there the rabbanan didn't make their takana, right? So that would not be a case. I think we'll stop here because this Rapapa story continues all the way over to next daf. I will point out again that Tosfos points out over here that the Gemara, we said this yesterday when we spoke about it. What the Gemara asks here about ksubim nechren should come from metalton. The Gemara rejects it because it's like suba. Like ksuba only comes out of real property, out of karkoi, you know, in the chasm sheish lemachrayus. So it also points out over here that after the takanas gonim, where what? We said yesterday that the gonim were metaking that ksuba can be even taken out of metaltalin, right? That would also apply to ksubas benin dechrin, would also have application out of metaltalin, because once the takanas gonim was established, and since it's kik ksuba, right, therefore it would work the same way that metaltalin would also be mishabdes.
Tomorrow.